So, Gats here, if you're like me, you love a good stat, but there's one stat you probably don't know, your vehicle's battery charge. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing and installation with no appointment needed. Battery start at just $79.99. They also have curbside pickup on any order. Enter the code DAN20 when you buy online to save 20% on your order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See stores for details.
What's up, boys? Welcome into the Tuesday edition of the Local Hour. Normal Tuesday crew here with you. Billy, Chris, Roy, Greg. I've got a funny place to start this Local Hour. So as we were trying to put everything together, Chris is like, hey, can you record it on your computer? I got to do a couple things. I'm like, yeah, for sure. So he sends me everybody's email. And Greg, he sends me your email in particular because I don't have it. So as I was typing it in, I was reminded of a really funny time in my youth that indirectly involves you, okay? So in high school, I went to Killian, and they would pass out newspapers as part of, you know, trying to culture us and get us to read stuff. So the newspapers were free, and every you know, day or every Tuesday or Thursday or whatever it was, I would pick up the newspaper, go to the sports section, and go to the upset bird picks.
Nice.
So the funny thing is I would pick them up in like second or third period in Spanish class when they would get delivered, and I became a bookie in my Spanish class off of your picks. So what I would do is I would pass the picks to around that everybody that likes sports, and they'd wager whether they liked your picks or not. And then I would take, you know, hey, $3 here, $2 there. So I would walk out of a Spanish class on a Monday if you had a good week, and I would make like 20 or 30 bucks just because kids didn't know what they were betting. So funny enough, Greg Cody and the upset bird has been something that has been around since my youth in my circle of friends.
Wow. That's pretty interesting to hear. For the uninitiated, I do NFL picks every Friday in the Miami Herald and they're online.
Right,
and, the upset bird is like, actually Levitard had a hand in inventing the upset bird. He's just like my little fictional character who helps me with my picks. But when you had a good week off of my picks, I noticed I never got a cut of that. Like, never got a vigorish.
I was one day going to let you know, hey, thank you for helping me, you know, feed myself throughout school for my sophomore year, basically, at least from September to about January. And then the picks obviously died off, and then I couldn't get any more action. But that was me. You know, what are you in 10th grade? 14, 15 years old?
Yeah,
probably making a little book out of my Spanish class with the upset bird picks. And I always used to love the squawk.
Yes,
that was my favorite.
Right, the upset bird talked in italics, like that. Well, your thanks is payment enough.
It feels like you want a little bit more than just the thanks in forms of payment here, Greg.
Well, you know. He's making money off of my picks. I mean, come on.
I'd have to go back into my book. I kept a very organized journal, so I knew who owed me money. And it's got to be in my parents' house somewhere alongside all of my school books and stuff. So if I find it, I'm gonna let you know so I can show. I'll send you a picture of it because it was funny, man. It was 17 weeks, and we were like all in because I started realizing, I was like, man, Greg's pretty good at this. Let me start betting on his picks instead of mine. And that's where it happened.
Is the high school bookie like a common thing? Because I remember in my high school experience, and I think it was also like sophomore year, like during homeroom, there would be a guy that would come around, you know, and he would basically do the same thing. He was like the bookie. He would come around and he'd take people's money and whatever. And I have to think that the teachers, because the teachers would be in there in homeroom, have to wonder, why is this guy coming in every day into my homeroom, taking money from people, writing things down and leaving? But it seems like everyone just kind of turns a blind eye to it. Like every high school just has a bookie. I'm assuming, well, I'm wondering, were you the school bookie for your grade?
I was not the school bookie. So I was a sophomore. And at that time there was, it's funny how every senior class, when you look back in time, looks so much older than the senior classes that come after them. Right. So like my senior class, when I was a sophomore, you're talking about guys that were playing Division I football. You're talking about guys that played Division I basketball. You're talking about like big, rough and tough guys. And then when I got to be a senior, I was like looking around, I was like, we're not that old. So at that point, I wasn't taking any bets from any seniors, any upperclassmen whatsoever. I would occasionally dip down because since the Spanish class was an elective, it was a mixed underclassmen class, so you would have 9th and 10th graders in it. And so that's where I usually did all of my bidding. I would never go up because, as you know, being a good bookie, if somebody doesn't want to pay up, you have to collect. And I wasn't really going to have to bring a lot of muscle to upperclassmen and be like, hey, you owe me $20 from the Bills-Chargers game. Like, well, what's going on? Are we paying up? So I had to keep my integrity so I could only do it to kids that I had, you know, sizable difference over.
You had muscle? Like, you
no,
had a muscle
I was,
that go around?
I was my own muscle. So,
and did ever things ever take a turn south? Or you had
never
to, like,
took a turn south. So I, again, only underclassmen. And again, I'm a big guy. I've been big my whole life. So in sophomore year, I was about 6'3", 190 pounds or so. So for me, it was easy to collect. The problem is when the guys on the basketball team who were 6'5", 225, guys on the football team that were going to go play at, you know, Division I colleges that were bigger than me, it was going to be like, all right, if I want to be integrous and collect on my bookie status, I'm going to have to do something to this guy, and I don't think I'm ready to do that. So I never did collect.
I have to ask, as someone who was bitten by the bookie bug fairly young in life, did you ever continue that proclivity into adulthood, if I may ask?
I didn't. It was something that was kind of a flash in the pan, lightning in a bottle, when it was like, all right, I can do this. And then when I left that class, in that Spanish class, my 10th grade year, I got a little bit, it was too much to try and bring somebody else in and then I have to split the money. So I never ventured out, and I never got the itch to do it like my junior or senior year. It was a great experience, so that got me through a Spanish class that was dreadfully boring.
Well, I certainly am proud that that I was able to play a small role in your delinquency.
I'm glad you were able to get out, you know. Too often you fly too close to the sun and you get burned, and then, you know, things take a turn south for you, and then you end up in jail. So
can you imagine the ulterior timeline of my life if Greg turned me into a bookie, then got me expelled out of school, then I start running game like in neighborhoods and with people I know, and then I turn into this big linchpin. And, you know, who knows, I dabble in other things, and it was all because of Greg, and I meet an untimely demise because of the upset bird.
I'd like to think, and I guess I shouldn't say I'd like to think, but I have to think that for every success story like you, there are dozens of stories that went the other way, that Greg's right. Responsible for the downfall of a lot of young people's lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roy says with no elaboration. What do you mean, Roy? What are you accusing me of?
I mean, it's just interesting to think about.
Yeah, I mean, everybody can have had a, you know, a good head on their shoulders like Anthony, and they probably got the upsets bird picks, and they've turned to, you know, a life of crime and drugs and who knows what else, you know? It's all because of the upset bird.
Yeah, you know,
I always advise people, do not read and drive, you know, because that'll kill you.
So, funny story. My dad has a really old iPhone. Do you guys have the iPhone with the button or the one that you just swipe? Roy, obviously, I'm not talking to you. I'm sorry. Even though one day you were almost an iPhone guy, and I'll hold on to that day forever.
I have the one where you just swipe, but until – I think I have an 11 or something. I don't even know what this is. I have a newer one, but before that I was stuck with like a 6S for a while because I don't like updating my phones. I don't care about all that. I don't like – I'm not about any of that. And I used to have the button. And I loved it. I used to love it. And I don't do the fingerprint thing. I don't trust Siri. I'm not a big – I don't know what happened to me early on in my life. Maybe I was, you know, Greg Cody related also. But I think I have trust issues. Mm. I don't trust technology. I don't trust, you know, the iPhone. I don't trust the Siri. I have this Google Home thing that plays music, but I feel like it's also listening to me all the time.
Sure.
So a lot of things going on technology-wise that I don't know that I trust.
Yeah, it's not only listening to you, it's judging you.
So, Greg, do you have the button on your iPhone or do you have the swipe mechanism?
My iPhone is so old it has a rotary dial. I don't even know what model it is, to be honest with you. It's a really old iPhone with a cracked screen, and my wife consistently shakes her head at me and admonishes me to get a new one, but I'm just too lazy and I haven't done it yet.
So like Billy, I had a 7+ for the better part of like 4 or 5 years. And I kept it in really good condition, never cracked, never had anything. And my dad is the opposite of me, where he sometimes doesn't take care of phones. And again, everybody has their thing. So what I was going to do is I was going to give my phone to my dad and I was going to upgrade and get a new phone. So I upgraded to the 11, Billy, the one that doesn't have like a button. And I'm trying to master the art of not having a button, but it's really weird because I'm always used to having that button. And I guess it's a new thing, but to get to a point where you're upgrading your technology, it's a scary thing.
I'm not for this upgrade. I mean, the 6S is fine for me. I have an 11. My wife told me that I needed to get one, so I got one. Do you have the two cameras or the three cameras? How many cameras do phones need, honestly?
I got the two camera one.
Yeah, me too.
So what does that even mean? There's one that has three cameras. There's one that has like almost like a block like this big full of cameras. And Billy and I have the one that's two cameras, but there are ones that have like the iPhone 11 Pro Max that has like eight cameras on the back. It looks like if you zoom into a beetle, you know how their eyes are, they're like a mosquito. They have like 40 eyes. That's basically what the camera looks like.
Why do you need more than one camera in a phone?
I think one of them is a wide lens or something. One of them has three cameras. I don't know what it does. I got to be honest with you. I didn't think we were going to be talking about iPhones and iPhone cameras today, so I'm a bit unprepared for it.
Yeah. Same, but that's it's just I was looking at it today, and one of the most dangerous things to have on a new phone is that weird time in between the time you get the phone and then the time you put a case on the phone. It's a very stressful time, and I'm right in the middle of that stressful time because I ordered one on Amazon, and I'm waiting for it to come in, but now I have to be extra careful with the phone that I just got.
It's like the modern day, the old like school thing, I guess, Greg, that they'd give you like an egg and you'd have to take care of it for a week. And this is like trying to show you what kind of parent you would be as if you could come back at the end of the week, like with an egg that was intact. That's like what the phone situation is. It's like when you buy the phone until when you get the case and when you get, I'm assuming you guys do it too, but like I also get like the screen protection thing that you put on the front. Cause like I don't want it to get scratched. That's I think the modern day, like what kind of parent are you going to be? Well, just look at someone's phone and see if their phone is like all messed up. Like, you know, not great. Let me see your phone.
Well, that makes me a bad parent because I went years as the only person on earth with an iPhone without a cover on it. There was no rubber casing, and hence I have that beautiful spider web crack on my phone. And it makes it tough because sometimes the crack will obscure a letter or a number, and I'll have to like scroll just to see what time it is. You know, I just need a new phone, man. Jesus. Wow. My wife is right. I hate to say it. I need a new phone.
Greg, I feel like sports are coming back. And I feel like you are the expert down here and you're the voice. Would you say you're the voice of Florida sports?
Florida sports. Wow. I would be honored to be considered that. I don't know.
Let's say South
particularly
Florida
with my
sports.
Voice right now. So you think sports are back, huh?
Well, no, they seem to be trending to coming back. The Marlins, I think, released who they're inviting to their summer camp. The Heat's roster should be out soon. I mean, it seems like we're trending in a direction where they're going to come back unless everything falls apart in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, they all have a plan now. Baseball finally came on board. But what's happening all around the planned return of sports is really scary. I mean, you all live in it just like I do, and you read the headlines and see the news, and this coronavirus thing seems to be getting worse. Yesterday, the World Health Organization announces that we haven't seen the worst of it yet. I mean, this is something that we're going to be dealing with as a country for months and months, if not years, I think. And fitting sports into that puzzle is going to be intriguing and frightening and everything else you can imagine. I'll be fascinated to see if sports actually comes back and whether they have to abort at some point. I just think it's a real treacherous unknown that sports is stepping into.
You know what's been interesting to me? So you have, I think there's been four major leaguers that have come out and said, we're not going to play this season. I think Ryan Zimmerman, Ian Desmond, a couple, I think Joe Ross, and then there was someone else. But there's been a couple that have said, you know what, it's not worth the risk to me. I've been interested in seeing the ones on the opposite end that are like, you know what, I'm not worried. I want to go play baseball, or I want to play basketball. I want to compete for a championship. And just to see how people in the same business, in the same industry, are on such opposite ends of the spectrum, because a lot of the narrative has seemed to be so far, hey, we're returning to sports because owners want their money. And there have been a lot of players, and if you see some of the reporting, I think Ramona has put it out there, there's been a lot of reporting where it's like the players think that they're not going to be harmed by this and want to get back to playing, and there's the ones that say that they don't. But it's interesting to see how no one's aligned on any of this. And it's like kind of the same as society in general, where there's the people that want to go out without the mask and the people that want to wear the mask. But it seems like the story has been so far owners and leagues are pushing for sports, when in a lot of instances it seems players want to get back just as much as the owners and the teams.
Yeah, it's absolutely a microcosm of what's happening all around, which is the reason why the world and the country and the state of Florida are finding it so difficult to get past this thing, because there is that dichotomy. You know, people, there's no in between. I find in my life, there's no in between. You're either the mask wearing, cautious, social distancing guy, or you're the one who just refuses to wear a mask. It's a, you know, you either, you're a science denier, or you just think it can't happen to me. I'm young and healthy. I'm never going to get it. You know, there's so many diversions of opinion out there that I get a kick when people say, oh, we're all in this together. No, we're not. A lot of us are in this together, and a lot of us aren't. And that's why the climate for the return of sports is so treacherous, because of everything that's happening, because of what you're talking about, Billy. So it's going to be weird to see this summer unfold in sports. Fascinating and strange.
Do you see it playing out? Because we were playing sound yesterday on the show from people basically in different sports. We had Buster Olney. We had Brian Windhorst. There was a Barry Melrose clip also where they were asking him essentially, what's the percentage chance that the season starts and what's the percentage chance that the season ends? And Windhorst in basketball seemed to be the most optimistic, where I think he said that it was 100% chance that it's going to start and 90% chance that it ends in a champion. Buster Olney from the MLB was the most negative, I'd say, where he said he thinks it's a 5% chance that it starts and a 0% chance that it ends. And I think Barry Melrose said 70-30 on it, you know, if he thought that the seasons would start. It was interesting to me, and this is probably boring to listeners, but whatever, I don't care, where the MLB bubble thing was kind of laughed at right out of the gate, and they just abandoned the bubble idea altogether, and now they're going to be, I guess, traveling to, you know, all the cities to play, which doesn't seem like it's going to be a good idea or really work out. And the NBA bubble seems to be like the way people are saying now that they should be doing it, which seems similar to what baseball's plan was originally. But even that is not, you know, foolproof. And even that has risks of, you know, outbreaks within the bubble. And then what do you do if someone gets, you know, sick during the playoffs and a team has to, you know, isolate? So I'm wondering what you think are the chances of the different leagues starting and finishing, because it seems like the football could be in jeopardy, I'd say, especially if you think there's going to be an outbreak. So I'm not even considering football, just the ones that we know there's a plan to start: baseball, basketball, hockey. Do you see these seasons finishing?
Yeah, I'm going to shamelessly plug my latest Greg Cody Show podcast, only because I had Tim Kirchen on there and asked him just that. And he sort of singled out baseball as having maybe the most dangerous plan, you know, trying to fly all over the country, playing in 30 different stadiums. He thinks that's problematic. He told me that he thinks it's likely baseball starts, but that he wouldn't be at all surprised if it doesn't. You know, everything is so fluid right now. The situation in the country today could be a lot different 5 days from now. So, you know, you can't say that these July startups are going to happen. There's a plan in place, but I think everything is so fluid that nothing that happens or doesn't happen would surprise me at this point.
I think the NBA is going to be a real litmus test for the return of sports in general, because if you can't do it and succeed in a bubble where quote-unquote people are not going to be able to go in and out, there's going to be local, state, federal authorities checking special ops groups, making sure that people aren't going in and out. Like, if you're saying that that won't work, then the MLB plan doesn't work, because what are you going to travel? So explain to me again, like layman's terms, on how the season would go. You play your division, and then you play your closest non-conference or non-league team, right? So the Marlins would be playing Tampa and the AL East. Is that how it would work?
To be honest with you, I don't think that a schedule's been released yet. I haven't seen a schedule yet in terms of who they're going to be playing. But even like to your point, basketball is kind of the test where you see, can something like this work?
In a bubble, too.
But baseball's going to be doing it simultaneously the opposite way. You know what I mean? Where like we're just going to be traveling and we're going to be playing our home games and our away games. And, you know, there was rumors that fans may be welcome at one point. I know that last week there was, I think Andy Slater put it out that he talked to the mayor, and the mayor said that he'd be open to the Marlins having fans, but they'd have to submit a proposal. And I asked the Marlins about that, and they told me flat out, like, we'd be crazy to consider having fans come to the games with the numbers that are coming out right now. Like, that's not something that we're considering. So even that, like, no one seems to be on the same page. It's just baseball. You know what's disappointing about baseball is that they seem to have an idea, and then the players didn't want it or whatever happened, and they abandoned the bubble, right? So now they're going to be trying something that's more dangerous. They're going to be trying it when cases are surging again, and it seems doomed to failure. And there's just, I guess, you can't really blame anyone, because no one knows how to deal with this, right? Because no one's gone through this. So like no league, no commissioner, no one knows the right way to do it. It just seems like basketball is doing it closest to the safest way to do it, but they're also doing it at the same time as everyone else who's doing it the wrong way. So there's just no answer here, I guess, on what you should have done. It just seems like
hockey has no plan, right? Roy, I haven't heard anything about hockey.
Yeah, they seem to be, well into phase three now. Everybody's, about to return to camp July 10th. So it seems like they're ready to go right now.
They haven't announced the cities though, right? Like the hubs?
No, they haven't announced the hubs yet.
So they're doing more of the baseball model that they're going to be traveling to different cities, and maybe some teams are going to be more isolated geographically.
There are going to be two cities that the teams are going to play in. I believe it's going to be conference-based. One of them might be Vegas, and the other one could very well be a Canadian city.
So they're like the middle ground. Like, there's basketball where everybody's in one place, baseball where everybody's going to be spread out, and hockey where you're going to have two bases, essentially, where everybody's going to be.
Yep.
I don't see
it. You've got baseball endeavoring to play 60 games prior to the playoffs, playing into the rising teeth of a coronavirus spike expected late in the year. So the idea of baseball season, you know, toughing it out through a World Series is just hard to believe. If I were a betting man, I wouldn't bet that they're going to crown a World Series champion this year.
I mean, baseball, so 60 games, if you break it down, you just assume it's 30 home, 30 road. Most series are, I don't know if they're going to continue three-game series just to get a diversity in the schedule of some kind and have two-game series. But you figure it's going to be 10 to 15 road trips per team, right, where they're going to be traveling. They're going to be staying in hotels. They're going to be in airports. Now, they fly private, but still you're exposed to whoever you're exposed to that you can't control. Even the Disney plan, I've heard and read, I think, that not all of the employees are going to be tested. Some will be tested. In terms of like people preparing food, security, whatever, like, but there's always going to be some sort of leak. There's going to be some sort of breach that, you know, can put people at risk. And baseball seems to be the most vulnerable for something like this happening. It's just, it's odd.
The thing is, how do you stop the spread, right? Like Woj tweeted out yesterday, two Brooklyn Nets have tested positive for the coronavirus, Jordan and Spencer Dinwiddie. Jordan opted out of Orlando as Dinwiddie is strongly considering the same. Nets will sign a substitute for Jordan. Per sources, Nets are presently the seventh seed in the East. Like, how do you stop this from taking over like wildfire the entire league? Like, to me, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, well, they're going to, I mean, the leagues are going to test like crazy. You know, they're going to take precautions like crazy. But like you say, if you're traveling around, I like the NBA plan the best because, you know, even hockey's going to be going to two different or to two cities, you know, two hub cities they're going to have. But baseball seems like a crazy plan because no matter how many precautions you take, no matter, you know, you can take somebody's temperature five times a day. But when you're doing all that traveling and all those different locations, you subject yourself to this virus, no matter the precaution. So it's going to be weird to see this play out in baseball in particular.
The thing about basketball that's also interesting is that while they're all in one place, they're in three places within one place. You know what I mean? Right. So they've split them up amongst three hotels. So like if you have an outbreak within the Nets, not just the Nets are vulnerable. Whoever the Nets played, and then if people are asymptomatic, whoever the Nets opponents played could also be there. Then there's also the same teams that are hanging out in the same hotel because you're going to assume these people are human. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be hanging out with each other in the off days. They're going to be bored. They're going to be playing with the ping pong or whatever it is at the amenities that they've said that are going to be available to these guys. So you'd think that once they get in, there shouldn't be a spread, but it could end the season very quickly. And this is the safest of the plans.
Right, exactly. So that brings me to this. The last kind of jump off point for the show is college football. Like let's be serious about college football for a second. When you have already teams and clubs that are posting a 20% COVID rate where you've got 10, 12, 15, 20 players that are testing positive out of 60 some odd, you know, on the roster. And they're not even in school yet. You don't even have these major universities that have 20, 30, 40, 50,000 kids roaming the campus. Like for me, that looks like a powder keg that's about to blow with the virus. Like when we talk about the second wave, I think that would be what incites it is hundreds of thousands, if not millions of kids at college campuses being almost part of that. Hey, you know what? I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to wear my mask. That whole kind of bravado behind it. That's where something like this could germinate and grow.
Yeah, because that's the when you think about athletes, college athletes, pro athletes, you're talking about let's talk about men's sports. You're talking about guys who are like 18 into their 30s. The pros have limitless money. This is the age group that thinks they're invincible. And this is the demographic, the wealth that can do anything. You know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, when you're in your 20s, you want to party. You want to socialize. And you're used to doing that. You know, the camaraderie, half of the camaraderie of sports is socializing. You know, being in a locker room, yucking it up and just having fun together. And that's, it's just going to be so tough for these guys to isolate and to get out of their norm and not socialize and not do all this stuff they're used to doing.
I think that's not just an athlete thing. That's just a young person thing. I mean, you see the videos online of people in boats, people on beaches. Like, spring break was absurd. Spring break, I think, as strange as it sounds and as you see the numbers keep growing and it seems to be, you know, more spread out than it has been before, people are more lax now than they were at the beginning of all of this. And at the beginning is when I think there was like the most fear and the most panic, right? And you just see the spring break videos. They didn't care. Like, things would be as wild as, you know, as any normal time because of what you're saying, kind of people being young and thinking that they're immune to all of this. I don't think that we're going to have college football. This has been such a bummer of a local hour, to be honest with you. It's such a depressing
turn. It started
turn.
Off so great.
I know. And then we just started talking about coronavirus. And honestly, like, who wants to hear what I think about coronavirus? You know what I mean? And like, yeah, I just – with colleges having 20% of the team break out, it almost seems like they're rooting for, you know, herd immunity at this point.
Exactly.
Where let's get everybody sick before the season so then we can just play the season, which is horrible. And it seems like not the way you should be thinking in terms of that. But I don't see how you could – and football, everybody's on top of each other. Man, what a bummer of a local hour this has been. I'm sorry, listeners.
I know what to do, guys. I know.
Do you guys go out? Sorry. Do you guys go out? I don't even leave. Like, I'm just I don't want to go outside because I don't trust anyone. And it has nothing to do, like, a mask obviously is uncomfortable. And when I go out, I'll wear the mask and it's not the best. But, like, I just find myself not leaving my apartment because I know for the most part, or I think for the most part, it's safest in here. And if I go out, it has to be, like, a big deal. And I'll go to, like, see my parents, or I'll go to, you know, pick up food. But even when I pick up food, I ordered food from a place one time and it was like a bar and I went to pick it up. No one was wearing masks. Everybody was like laughing, like right on top of each other. I'm like, I got to get out of here. And then I think I told you guys this, I had to like sign the thing. And I was like, then I'm touching a pen. I'm touching a receipt. It's too much.
Well, now that we're done with the, you know, coronavirus situation, he's been quiet all show. He's been here waiting, ready to talk. Chris Cody, your time to shine. 4 minutes. What do you got?
Jeez, just finally give me a chance to speak. By the way, at the restaurants, they're doing this thing now where they hold the credit card machine out to you and you swipe it. I've had that experience the last few places that I've gone. So there's no contact. Like the first couple weeks of this, months of this, it was just usual business. And I was like touching all these like pads and stuff. But now people have figured out to just like extend the pad. That's all I have.
I mean, I'm glad that you waited this long.
It was worth the wait, I think.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
You know what I saw the other day in my building, Anthony, and I'm wondering if you've seen this because you guys, everyone else lives in a house, but me and Anthony live in apartments. So there's obviously like a mailroom, right? And like where your like Amazon or whatever would get delivered. I walked by the other day and the lights were turned off, but the door was open and I just saw a guy in the room passing like an ultraviolet light over all of the boxes. And it looked like a crime scene. It looked like a black light, like it's this purple light and passing it over all the boxes. And I asked him like joking. I was like, was there a crime here? Like what's going on? And he's like, no, they told us that we have to do this and that this kills the, you know, bacteria or this kills the virus if it's on the box. And it's like, get out of here. Like, I appreciate that you guys are taking these steps to try to keep everybody safe, but a purple light is what's going to be the one that solves us from all of this. It just doesn't seem like likely that that's going to be the cure to all of this. I appreciate that, you know, the steps that I'm thankful for these added security steps that you guys are taking to protect us, but it just kind of goes to show you where nobody knows how to stop any of this. The leagues don't know. The people in my mail room don't know. Nobody knows what to do about this. We're just all figuring it out together.
I have no ultraviolet light people going through my, you know, my mail room or anything like that. What I do have is an abundance of people that do not wear masks, even though it's strictly says on every elevator, in every hallway, in every crevice of this apartment complex, please wear a mask, please wear cloth, this, that, and the third. CDC says this. And people still just do not wear masks. Like, I have a mask and I wear it every time I leave. And there's people that just decide not to do it. So I'm going to have to start being one of those guys like, hey, mask, huh? No mask?
I was just going to say, how do you handle it right now? Is it just a dirty look and you avoid them? Or you have nobody is – has anybody here said – like ever spoke out to somebody like, hey, what do you – come on, man. Like,
nah.
Nah.
Well, I have in Publix, the aisles are one way. Clearly arrows.
You called someone out?
I politely – a couple of times, you know, there's five people obeying the one-way arrow, and there's one person who isn't. And if I'm in a mood, occasionally I will murmur to that one person as we're passing by. One-way aisle, by the way. That's all I say. One-way aisle.
Sound? How's the murmur sound? How's it sound?
One-way aisle, by the way.
out of the side of your mouth, like one-way aisle.
Yeah, one-way aisle, by the way. You know, I don't want to embarrass them. I don't want to be confrontational, but I want to let them know. Maybe they don't know. Maybe it's an honest mistake. Although now Publix has begun to make periodic announcements about the one-way aisles, which I appreciate. And I suggested to the manager they do that, so I'm going to take credit for that. I'm big on talking to my manager when things go wrong in Publix. You should see me behind somebody in the express lane with 12 items. Don't get me started.
I thought it was 15.
I think it's 10 in my Publix.
I think it's 10 or less.
It could be 10 or 12 or 15. I don't know.